gambling gods, fickle bunch.
Oh, yeah.
So easily offended.
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talks.
The Weekend Wager with Anita Marks starts now.
I have to play well. I have to earn my way to Eastlake. I haven't done so yet. And need a big week this week in order to advance. If I don't, then I go home. So just a big week for me. I'm looking forward to getting out there and playing, competing. This golf course is set up more like a U.S. Open than is a regular tour event. But this is the playoffs. It's supposed to be hard. Last week, I think it might have been a little outlier because of the weather. Greens were soft and receptive, and the majority of the field went low, and then DJ went absurdly low. So that won't be the case this week. Pars be at a premium. Putting the ball in the fairway and trying to keep the ball in the correct spots. The greens are quick, hard, and firm for now. You know, the weather's supposed to be really hot the next few days and maybe breaking Friday night. So, but until then, it's going to be a very, very difficult golf course.
That is Tiger Woods talking about the performance that he needs this week in order to advance the Tour Championship, to get down to the final 30 in as I like to call it, Hotlanta, to see if they could win the Tour Championship. But right now, Tiger came out today. He was +5, so he's +8 on the leaderboard. Shot a 73 on Thursday, a 75 today. Sorry, not sorry. That's not going to get the job done. Without further ado, David Berman joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. His Week in Wager. BetMGM is sponsoring the show as always. Believe in your game. Believe in your bet. BetMGM Sports. David, good evening. How you doing?
Good. I thought we were going to have to wait till September to see a U.S. Open, but evidently one broke out this week in Chicago. And I think Tiger just said it, and I've heard other people say it. It's a playoff. It's supposed to be hard. People forget what happened last week. That was a playoff. I mean, Dustin Johnson was 30 under par. He was 15 under par at the turn after 36 holes last week. You know what the leader is now? -1. I mean, it's like two different sports going on right now. It's definitely different.
It's definitely two different storylines. I mean, when you've got like Matt Kuchar, who's +11, Jason Day, who's +10, Colin Morikawa, +9, Tiger Woods, +8.
I took Leishman in a matchup, a head-to-head matchup this week for the week, and he's 18 over par, and he's not out of it either.
It's really unbelievable. As always, David has become a staple on Weekend Wager, which is always great. Talking all things golf, getting you ready for the weekend, where you can have some fun, whether it's DFS or putting some money down on who you think at this point. Two rounds already in the books, two more to go on Saturday and Sunday. Who might finish in the top 5, the top 10? So let's break it down. You mentioned Dustin Johnson and just what, and we heard Tiger Woods talk about how incredible Dustin Johnson was, DJ was last week. He's even right now, so he's one shot back. He was 1 under today, and you could bet him to win it. He's 4-1 right now. Is that wise money heading into Saturday and Sunday, David?
I mean, I guess you got to look at it as you're getting 4-1 on your money for a guy who's only one shot back, who's played better than anybody else over the last 6 weeks. So I think it is wise money. He was the favorite coming into the event. And yeah, the price has gotten shorter. He's not 8, 9, 10 to 1 like everybody was when the event started. But after 36 holes, you throw everything out the window. There are probably, 70 in the field. So throw out 30 of them who are just way too far back, and everybody else still has a chance. But Dustin Johnson's one shot back. And I look at that as, I was actually surprised to see that 4-1. I thought it would be a little bit less than that. But when you look at the leaderboard, sure, there's Rory's there and Cantlay's there. And, you know, Matsuyama had the best round of the day Thursday, and then he was the exact opposite today and hung on to be even par after a 3-over round. But I think the smart money is Dustin. It's obviously not the value play, but it is the smartest one out there because you're getting, you know, the guy who won last week and he's only one shot back. If you look a little deeper, I picked him last week and didn't win, but Adam Scott is 16-1, and he's right there as well. And I want to give you a name that who I took in the column at 70-1. You can still get him at 66-1. Alexander Noren is just hanging around. He's only 3 over par, 4 back, hanging around within smoking distance, and you're still getting him at the pre-tournament price, which is rare. If a guy's usually 4 back up to 36 holes, you're not getting him at 66-1 when he opened at 70. But and it was one of my long shots. He's still there. And I do think he can contend. But, yeah, the smart money would be Dustin.
Some of the guys that I do want to mention, Rory, believe it or not, is tied for the lead with Cantlay at 1 under. You could get rid, and not that he's had a great season so far, but you can get him 4-1. I'll be honest with you, tonight before I go to bed, I'm probably going to put some money on Patrick Cantlay. He's 5-1, top of the leaderboard, 2 under today, shot a 71 on Thursday, 68 today. That's probably where my money's riding. Also, Deki Matsuyama, he's 11-1. Now, one metric heading into this tournament, David, was ball strikers. And, you know, unfortunately, the problem with Deki is he's just not a great putter. And which is really interesting that he's even right now, and he's tied with Dustin Johnson at 2. But what I find interesting is this is a course that, you know, your putter needs to be working because these greens are running like 12 and 13s. But he's up there. So, you know, maybe I'm going to put some money on Deki to finish like in the top five. You could get that at plus 170, 175.
I do think there's a lot of tremendous value on taking a guy like Hideki to win, because you just mentioned it. Hideki is tied with Dustin Johnson right now, 1 shot back behind Cantlay and McIlroy. But yet Johnson and McIlroy are 4-1. Cantlay's 5-1. Matsuyama's 11-1, obviously because of the putter issues. But you're talking about a guy who's 1 shot back, and you're getting twice, if not 3 times the amount of odds with him over Dustin and Rory, who are all around the same. Let me ask you this question, though, as you mentioned Cantlay. Right now they're 5-1, 4-1 with Dustin. Cantlay's 1 shot up. If gun to your head, if you had to pick one of them to win the tournament, you're picking Dustin, though, right?
Yeah, I'm picking. Yes, I'm probably going to put money on DJ and Rory and Cantlay and Deki.
Yeah, I'm probably
going to put money on all of them. I'm just saying, don't leave Cantlay out of it. Especially since, you know, he's a guy that I'm calling him the bubble boys, which is the next topic I want to tee up for you. And let's rewind here just to explain to some of our listeners out there. Maybe you're not really big golfers. Maybe you're on your way home from hopefully maybe a nice evening out, and you're just happy to listen to Sports Talk Radio and hear David and I are talking about golf. This is the Tour Championship in that it's 3 legs. So now this is the 2nd leg, and only the 30 best players in regard to points are going to advance and head to Atlanta next week. DJ is at the top with 2571. Then there's JT, Webb Simpson, Berger, Morikawa, and there's a few quote unquote bubble boys that need to perform well and finish in a certain spot in order to get a certain number of points so that they can advance and make their way to Atlanta next week. Those guys are Matthew Wolf, Cantlay, Adam Scott, Jason Day, Tiger Woods, and Bubba Watson. So I guess my question to you is, heading into the weekend, David, are you going to put your money on these guys in regard to matchups, knowing that so much is on the line for them to have to win in order to advance to get to Atlanta next week?
Yes, and I think that's a very, very, very smart idea for the listeners to have. And actually, in our column on ESPN Chalk, that is the reason I picked Alex Noren, is because he was 47th coming into the week. So he had to move up to 30th, as you said, to make it to Atlanta next week. So to me, Noren, although not on the bubble, is somebody who had to finish extremely high in order to make it to Atlanta, which is why I threw some money on not only to win at 70-1, but get into the top 10 at 3.5 to 1 because a top 10 finish would likely move him into the top 30. But the guys you mentioned, Bubba's playing well. I had him last week at the Northern Trust, and he did extremely well. I think Matthew Wolf is the guy that I would put money on in a matchup because of those very, very reasons. Cantlay's getting the job done, but I do like the theory, and Felica, Chris the Bear Felica, wrote to it in the column. You wrote to it in the column, and I did as well, that this is the second to last event of the year, and you don't go on if you don't get there. So those guys, whether they're going to win the event or not, are going to do everything they can. Look what Louis Oosthuizen did last week on the 18th hole just to make it to the top 70. So, Tiger was a bubble boy. I think that bubble has burst. He's all the way on the other side. But you notice on the leaderboard, if you look, Bubba Watson +2, Matthew Wolf +3, Alexander Noren +3. Those are guys within striking distance of the top 30 who are going to need probably a top 10 finish. So it would be wise to throw money on some of those guys.
And just to look at some of the matchups that I'm eyeing, you've got Rahm going up against JT tomorrow. If you want Rahm, it's -150. You've got Tiger going up against Jason Day. If you want Tiger, it's -175. And here's one that I really like, but it's too much juice for me, David. And that's Adam Scott going up against Paul Casey. You want Adam Scott? It's -345.
Those are high numbers. You normally don't.
I know. It's high numbers, dude. It's high numbers.
Did you say Scott is -3 something versus
-345 against Paul Casey? I know.
Is Casey playing left-handed? What's going on?
I think so. I don't know.
I'm tempted to take the other side just because that's a high number. I have to actually go look at that while you're talking.
Are there any, and besides the ones that I mentioned, anybody else out there that you're looking at that you feel like, for example, like I really like Henley, and I liked Henley coming in. I want to believe that I wrote about him in the article. He was 1 under today. He's +3 on the board. He's tied for 13th. So he shot a 74 on Thursday, 69 today. So, that's a guy that I'm going to be eyeing. I really liked Henley coming into this to begin with.
I mean, Daniel Berger is a guy who I don't want to give up on. I pick him every single Wednesday on your show and every single Friday on your show. he had a rough day today, so he's back at 5 over par. It's still technically only 6 shots off the lead. I don't think he's going to win it, but Daniel Berger is all team first top 10. He gets top 10 every single week, and you can find value on him right now to finish in the top 10. And scrolling as we speak, but Berger to finish in the top 10 would be 6.5 to 1. And those are odds you're not going to get pre-tournament, and he just has to move up. And here's the thing. I was talking to a buddy of mine today who was watching the train wreck out there, and he said somebody on Sunday, if not Saturday, probably on Sunday, is going to go early and post. And you're going to go out there and maybe that one guy who shoots a 65 and posts a high number and be in the clubhouse, having a vodka martini and win the tournament. Because you see the way this field is falling apart to the course. If you're this is the type of tournament with it so tight right now that if you go ahead and post early, you could legitimately be sitting there for 2 hours waiting to see if someone's going to hit your number. A guy like Daniel Berger could do that. Go out there on Sunday, post a 65, all of a sudden be 2 under par for the event, and nobody else reach him. But long ways to go before that happens. But, he's a guy that I always like and always will continue to throw money on until he has, an off day. But I think Russell Henley is one that can actually get it done. And don't discount your boy Xander. I'm surprised we're, 11 minutes into this hit and you haven't mentioned Xander Schauffele yet.
He is my boy, isn't he? Has he become my boy? Has he like surpassed Ricky Fowler as my boy? Well, has he replaced Ricky Fowler as my boy?
you have to play to be your boy, and Ricky unfortunately is at a public golf course this week and not playing in Chicago. So yeah, you have to make the event. So
Really, a few more things I want to tee up for you before we let you go. David Berman joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. He oversees our gambling site on ESPN, Chalk, Daily Wager, all that great stuff. So Webb Simpson decided not to play in this. And I do need to rewind again for some of our listeners out there. So you compete to try to get to the Tour Championship, which is going to be in Atlanta next weekend. And so the person who goes into the Tour Championship with the most points, which right now is Dustin Johnson, goes in 10 under. The person with the second most points, who has that right now, is Justin Thomas. He will go in at 8 under. Webb Simpson right now has the third most points with 2,163. He would have entered into, if the Tour Championship was this week, at 7 under. He elected to not participate in this tournament. Okay? And he's going to take the week off, re-energize, practice, get ready for Hotlanta. My question to you is, so with that being said, and how this might all play out, he's more than likely going to go in somewhere around, I don't know, anywhere between 6 and 10 at that point. So therefore, he would be losing about 3 strokes, David, heading into Atlanta. Do you think that was a wise decision? Webb Simpson not playing this week, anticipating to go into Atlanta 7 under, or deciding not to play this week and going into Atlanta 4 under. Do you feel that was a wise decision on Webb Simpson's part?
Well, let me start by saying, whether you agree or disagree with the decision, Webb Simpson has earned the right to make that call because he has played so well and he's gotten himself into third position, as you mentioned, and he has earned the fact that, hey, if he's going to fall to 6th or 7th, that's his decision, and you know he can afford to do that because he got up to third place. It's not something you could do if you were sitting in 27th. That being said, under the old system of 2 years ago that we remember where if you were in the top 5 and you won the Tour Championship, you automatically won the entire thing, I think under that scenario, it would be a whole lot more understanding that, hey, you got up there, playing this week's not going to get you much else. Even if you fall to 6th or 7th, you have a darn good shot at this thing. Under those old rules and format, I think it would have been a no-brainer to go ahead and take a rest and a mental break and come back and win. Under the new system, it's a little bit less fishy because, like you said, you get a score based on where you enter. So instead of entering at 6 under par or 8 under par, he might enter at 3 under par or 5 under par. And so he is, in essence, losing strokes by doing so. That being said, Rory McIlroy last year was 5 shots back entering and won the entire thing. So it's doable, obviously, over 4 rounds. I do understand if you look at this post-COVID sprint. You know, we came back in May and they've done nothing but play every single week. There's been the occasional week here or there where they took off, but we're talking about, you know, 10 to 15 tournaments, a major, 2 WGCs, Jack's event, the Northern Trust. It's been one thing after another. We keep talking about how awesome the fields have been for 85% of these events. These guys are tired. This is tough. It's tough to do this time in and time out. So I get it. The format probably would have made me pause because now he's going to lose 3 to 5 shots by not playing, but he at least earned the chance to be able to do this by his awesome play so far.
David, thank you so much for joining us. We want to remind folks, check out ESPN.com, go to the Chalk site. Each week we provide a lot of golf content, where to spend your money, where to wager on golf. And as we know, the NFL season is about to kick off and we've got a really exciting NFL column that's about to drop. When is that going to happen?
We're going to have it early this week. We might have it as early as Sunday, but likely on Monday. You know, we obviously are being sensitive towards the situation that's going on with sports right now and the racial injustices and the players not playing. But the column is ready to go. I have your picks. I have my picks. The Bear, Chris Felica, Joe Fortenbaugh, Preston Johnson, and Doug Kazarian, all of our NFL preview picks, are in the column. Look for it early this week to hit ESPN.com chalk, and we'll all tweet it out. But it's going to be it's a fun column. We're, believe it or not, 2 weeks away from the NFL, and we have all of our projections out there. So I'll give you a little tease. Take the Bears under win total.
Okay. I love it. David, thank you so much. Always a pleasure having you on. Enjoy your weekend.
You too. Have fun.
This is The Weekend Wager with Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. You want
it now. We've talked about it. I mean, with quarterbacks, you want to go ahead and be calculated in how you start banging them around. I don't think we're going to throw him in any, you know, Royal Rumbles or anything like that. But, you know, at some point we'll pop his pads a little bit in a controlled environment. You know, maybe that's with, you know, a young guy who understands just kind of, you know, hitting him a little bit. But I'm not in a hurry to go ahead and just beat the hell out of him, Tom. But, you know, at some point we'll prepare his body for he may take him first game.
That is Joe Judge trying to explain a lot of his comments about possibly taking Daniel Jones's red jersey off. Joel, do you remember the movie Replacements, right? Was that what it was called? Replacements?
Yeah, the one with Keanu Reeves.
Yes. Is that what it's called?
Is it
called
The Replacements.
The Replacements. And he was wearing the red jersey. And I guess a defensive player came in at practice and tackled him. And he looked at the player and he said, "Red means stop. Red means stop. Red means don't touch me. Don't touch me." There's a reason for that. There's a reason why your quarterback is wearing a red jersey. Red means stop.
But he saw it. He was like a bull. He saw red and he went crazy.
Isn't that the name of the actor? Isn't the actor's name Bull?
Is it?
I don't know. I think it is.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
I don't know. But anyway, that was the big news this week when it comes to the Giants and Joe Judge and just how he's running things over there, making players run laps for mental mistakes. I read something today on CBSSports.com that he's taping tennis balls to the hands of defensive players. Have you heard that?
That's pretty cool.
Oh, I'm glad you think that's cool. I read that this evening while I was prepping for the show. I have to make some calls to confirm that.
Sounds innovative.
And yeah, but I want to understand, like, what's the purpose of that? So we'll see. But anyway, so what I wanted to do right now is when the season starts, it's always wise to put money down on NFL games before Sunday. And I understand, like, you know, a lot of people, it's like there's a lot of people out there who don't start thinking about the NFL, don't start thinking about football until Sunday. Right. But at that point in time, the lines change. Why do lines change? Well, lines change based on money flow. So because whether it's Vegas or now it's New Jersey or what are we up to? I think we're up to like 22 states, Joel, that now have legalized gambling. You know, they don't want to lose money. So they hedge wagers, and that's why lines change. So it's always wise to get ahead of, and that's why when you hear like, you know, the Sharks in Vegas, they're all over, like right now, you know, the Sharks in Vegas, they're all over, you know, Cincinnati and the under at 5.5. That's where the shark money's flowing. Okay. So chances are that line's going to change soon. Right. So I've already looked ahead to week one of the NFL season and those lines that are out there. So, I want to spend some time looking at those lines with all of you. So what I'm going to do, because we are up against a break, before we do start diving into that, I just want to share the lines with you. So the first game of the season we know is Kansas City and Houston. Kansas City is going up against Houston. Kansas City is favored by 10. Now, I'm, and I've said this, if you listen to my weekend shows, and I've said that this a lot here on these shows, and again, this is Weekend Wager brought to you by BetMGM, believe in your game, believe in your bet, BetMGM Sports. I am putting a lot of emphasis. I am banking on home, like, okay, so home field advantage these days obviously is different. There's a number of teams that will have a fan base. The Jags, the Cowboys, the Colts, the Bucks, the Chiefs, and the Dolphins are all going to have some type of fan base. Apparently, it's no more than 25%. So take that into consideration, number one. For the teams that are not going to have a fan base, they're still going to have fan noise piped in to the stadium. And I would imagine that that fan noise is going to be a lot higher. The decibel is going to be a lot higher when the opponent's offense is on the field than when the home team's offense is on the field. Let's keep that in mind. But more importantly, in this pandemic, and I have not traveled yet. Joel, have you traveled yet, by the way?
Not since the pandemic. I've been being responsible, quarantining.
Right. Yeah, me too. I do know some people who've, like, you know, I've got a very dear friend whose daughter just had a baby. So she flew to Chicago. I know quite a few people who've traveled for work. But, for NFL teams that are going to be traveling, there's a lot that's going to be asked of them. The protocols. It's just going to be very, very different, and it's going to be very difficult. So in previous years, home team advantage equates to 3 points in a game. So let's say you have two teams that are somewhat equal. The home team is going to get favored by 3 just because they're the home team. To me, that home team value, that home team favor, to me has to go up to 5, because all that it's going to entail for an NFL team to go on the road during a pandemic and in a pandemic environment, and all that's going to be expected of that team, the protocols that team and those players are going to have to follow, I think are going to be difficult. I mean, there's also some teams that are talking about traveling the same day they play. So just marinate in that for a minute. And when we get back, I'm going to share with you some of the week 1 NFL lines that are out there, and the ones that I'm eyeing, that I've already put money down on, that I feel really, really good about.
This is the Weekend Wager with Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, this is Brett Musburger, and you're listening to Anita Marks on the Weekend Wager.
Hour 2, Weekend Wager, brought to you by BetMGM. That's right. Believe in your game. Here on 98.7 ESPN. Without further ado, Preston Johnson joins us. He's one of my partners in crime when it comes to ESPN and Daily Wager, which we're really excited about. Our show back in action. Preston, is it September 8th, I think, right?
Yeah. Should be the 8th.
I should know that, right? Okay.
You were right.
Anyway, so we're really, really excited about it. Our new studios just opened up in Las Vegas, and so it's going to be a fun season. So Preston, thank you so much for joining us as always. I so appreciate your time. As we know, the past 24, 48 hours have been just wild in regard to the boycotting that has gone on in the NBA, Major League Baseball, soccer, hockey, all of it. But it's nice to know that the NBA is going to be back in action tomorrow. First game is tip off is at 3:30, and that's the Magic and the Bucks. I know you text me where your plays are, but I would like to kind of touch on all the games that we're going to see on Saturday and Sunday. So the Magic and the Bucks favored by 13.5. The over under in this is 227. The Bucks are already up on the series 3-1. I found this interesting. Giannis over under 31.5 points. I think that could be fun. You know, I'm in looking at this, do you feel, because the guys, have been off and maybe they're a little bit more rested, and also coming in, maybe anticipating them to be a little bit more fiery because of the boycotting and all that went down, that you're expecting maybe a surreal performance from maybe Giannis or a surreal performance from LeBron James. What are your thoughts on this Magic Bucks game?
So yeah, at this point in a series in the playoffs, you know, generally after four or five games of a series, we kind of know what we're getting, and the market's pretty efficient at this point, right? Like the Bucks are 13.5, 227. Earlier in the series, you know, you could get the Bucks as low as minus 11. You know, that's kind of corrected now, even though they did lose game one to Orlando. So there's not really a ton of value in most cases, I think, in some of these series, unless there's been kind of a run, which we'll get to, at least one particular game or series, or where there have been adjustments that are to be made that kind of counteract what one team is doing. In this case, you can't really stop the Bucks. You can only do so much. And after that first game with the Magic upset, you know, Milwaukee's taking care of business. I expect more of the same. I do have this total slightly higher projected personally at 228.3. So I think this, the line's spot on. Maybe there's some 226s out there if you shop around, and maybe a slight lean, if you want to call it that, to the over. But I ultimately will just be staying away, which is, you know, there's no problem with that, and just kind of reassess things with Milwaukee once they meet in the second round.
All right. The second game, 6:30 p.m. Is tip off. And you've got, of course, the Thunder going up against the Rockets. And Westbrook is expected to be back in this game. You've got the Rockets that are favored by 5.5. Over under is 226.5. For them to win the series right now is minus 240. The series right now is tied up 2-2. So your thoughts on, you know, how different of a dynamic is this with Westbrook back?
So my main thing was pre-series that Russell Westbrook doesn't really change a ton of what the Rockets could do. And specifically offensively, you know, Harden plus four shooters rather than Harden plus three shooters and Westbrook could actually be more deadly. And, you know, the numbers back it up. On the season as a team, they had an offensive rating of 112.9, which was really good. It was either second or third best in the league. When they had Westbrook off of the floor and Harden played, their offensive rating was 118.7, which is just, oh, you know, would be the best of all time. And we saw, you know, at least through those first two games, everyone was like, oh, okay, yeah. I mean, they were underdogs in game one. They never should have been. And now the market's, you know, priced them as the favorite in the three games since. Well, OKC's pretty good themselves, and they've kind of countered what Houston was doing. Well, it also required Houston to miss a bunch of threes in that fourth quarter of game four. But with Lou Dort taking, you know, on that Harden role of defending him, and he's playing 30-plus minutes, and they're going smaller to kind of match what Houston does, and playing Danilo Gallinari at center, they've kind of figured some things out where I don't think it's really a coincidence that, you know, they've been able to hang in the last two games. They've pulled off two wins. And this is, you know, this is plus 5.5, some places now. And just because Russ is back, again, I know he's great. He's got the motor defensively. He can be a force. But I would only look to the OKC side. I think this is kind of getting now too far the other extreme. Rockets plus two in game one. That was a ridiculous number. Even with rest, they shouldn't be laying 5 or 5.5 here. So I would only look to the OKC side at this point. And who knows, maybe it takes rest some time, especially the first half. Maybe you can get Oklahoma City plus 3 or 2.5 at least in the first half. If it takes Westbrook some time to kind of, you know, get used to, you know, playoff basketball again. He just hasn't played yet.
And not only just playoff basketball, Preston, but, you know, in the bubble, you know, in playing in that kind of environment, it's totally different. So I like that. I like the Thunder getting the points in the first half. The last game tomorrow night, 9:00, Portland and the Lakers. Lakers favored by 13.5. Over under here is 223.5. LeBron point total over under 27 points. Also, you can wager that LeBron James gets a triple double at plus 240. Now, before we start breaking down the X's and O's here, I'm sure you're well aware of the reports that in the player only meeting that took place, LeBron James, I guess, ruffled a few feathers, stormed out. And there's some, as Stephen A. Smith is reporting and Woj is reporting, that there are a number of young NBA players that are pretty disappointed in LeBron's behavior at this meeting. There's I, you know, and again, I could be reading into this. I could be the drama queen that I aren't I'm not typically in life, maybe just on the radio, but like I can envision LeBron James coming out and having like a monster game based on all that's being reported right now and, you know, a knock on his image. So I'm curious, does that triple double at plus 240 intrigue you?
It doesn't. I don't know if that's a good enough price. Maybe, I mean, if you offered like 4 or 5 to 1, then I'd probably have to consider it. The worry here with this game, just in any props in general, if you're going to dig in that way, I mean, they're also a massive favorite now because Dame Lillard's going to be out. And, you know, for all we know, LeBron doesn't even end up needing to play the fourth quarter. And so at that point, it's going to be hard to tally at least the 10 rebounds and 10 assists side of a triple double. And so, yeah, I probably wouldn't get too involved. You know, where I did want to look, and I did bet earlier before the postponement of some games when I started hearing that Lillard was probably going to miss time, is I had bet the under, and it was at the time 225.5. And I still think at 223.5, it's still a little high. You'd be surprised. You go back, you know, this season, the data on the Blazers, when Dame Lillard plays, when he's on the floor, they're 11.5 points better per 100 possessions on offense.
Wow.
Okay, defensively, they're slightly worse. They're about 1.5 points worse defensively, but he makes up for it because he's so much better. He makes their offense so much better. The only other guy that's actually better on limited minutes because he's been injured a lot is Zach Collins, but he's also injured now and can't play in this game. So I don't know where the points are going to come from a Blazers team that already was struggling to score. Even in that game one, the Lakers had to, you know, set records to even lose that game because they missed so many shots. I just did a lot of Carmelo Anthony. Is CJ McCollum really a guy that you think can drop 50 and, you know, lead a team against a defense that's just been playing so well? I still would look under in this game, if anything, especially if it does become a double-digit game in the fourth quarter, the Lakers start slowing it down or scrubs come in from both sides. You know, anything can kind of go wrong in that sense. If you're rooting for points or for overs on props, I think this is a game to bet under for the game or to look unders as far as props are concerned.
Interesting. Well, you set me straight. Preston Johnson joining us here at 98.7 ESPN. Let's take a look to Sunday. And Sunday, the first game, 1 o'clock is tip-off, is a game that you do like. Celtics getting 2.5 against the Raptors. The series, if you think the Celtics are going to win, it's plus 115. If you think the Raptors are going to win, it's minus 143. Your thoughts on this matchup? Oh, over-under is 118.
218.
So who do you like here?
218.
The over-under is 218, yes.
Okay, so you said 118. I wanted to make sure that wasn't the series.
Yeah, because you'd probably hang up with me right now and go online if it was 118.
Hurry and bet something over 118 for the max, please. Yes, make some calls. So this is probably the most intriguing series just from a basketball standpoint. There's so much going on. So me personally, before the bubble, before the restart, I actually had the Celtics an ever so slight favorite to the Raptors. And so much so that it's like minus 102, right? With my, you know, plus 100 being a 50-50 game, I have them like 50.6%. Now, when you extrapolate that over the course of a 7-game series, it winds up being a true price for me of the Celtics minus 105. So the idea is, well, you're getting plus 115 now, a great bet. Well, the problem is that Gordon Hayward injured his ankle, grade 3 sprain. He's out, at the time they announced it, at least 4 weeks. Probably not going to make an appearance in this series. So for me, I value Gordon Hayward to the point spread for the Celtics. You know, it means more Wanamaker, more Ogilvy, more Langford's been playing, the Williams guys. Like, for me, it's 1.2 points per game. So when I account for the fact that they don't have Hayward, each spread now 1.2 points ends up being a couple percentage points per game that they're not going to win. This now turns in, for me, I have this Celtics plus 114 as an underdog, which is almost exactly the price that's being offered there at plus 115. So it'd totally be a stay away. But then Kyle Lowry, last game they played against the Nets, he got hurt early. He injured his ankle. Now, I haven't heard anything definitive that he won't be playing, but he's not 100%. And when you actually look at the matchup, they actually met a few weeks ago in the bubble restart games. There's probably I don't know if there's, of all the elite teams, and I think we can include Toronto in that conversation, there probably isn't a better matchup for Boston, because they're the team that doesn't have the ability to attack Boston's weakness, which is rim protection. It's Daniel Tyson, Enes Kanter. These aren't guys that can stop Giannis or even Embiid had Philadelphia made a run and stayed healthy or something in the Eastern Conference. And obviously Anthony Davis or any of the Clippers guys that can attack the rim. And so when it's Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka, which are guys that are out on the perimeter setting screens and shooting jumpers, I'm not too concerned. Now, Pascal Siakam can maybe to some extent, but not to the extent Giannis or some of the elite guys really could. And I think we'll see a Boston team that matches up well in that regard. And it's too bad there's no Hayward, but kind of accounting for everything, I think that you're going to get Lowry at his worst, or at least health-wise at his worst in game one. I think that they're close to even. I'd make the Raptors nearly a one-point favorite. So getting 2.5 is already some value anyways relative to the market. And then the final thing is just that I think the Raptors and Nick Nurse and their philosophy and just the way he coaches, they definitely are more equipped to make adjustments after a game one or two or three. You even saw it in that Bucks series in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. They were down 0-2, and then they figured out they solved Giannis, and it was in the Bucks' 4 straight wins, and then they go on to win the national, or I should say the NBA championship. I think you can catch Toronto early before they make those adjustments, before Lowry's ankle comes along and he starts playing on it some, and you know he's getting closer to 100%. I think now's the time to bet Boston +2.5, and so that would be my angle here for game one.
Love it. Love it. Game two on Sunday, tip off at 3:30. And that's the Clippers going up against the Mavs. No Porzingis. We're told he's going to be out for the remainder of this series, dealing with meniscus in his knee. And we know Luka, he tweaked his ankle the other day. I know that he's had the last 2 days. All of them have had the last 2 days to kind of rest and heal, which is a positive. But you've got the Clippers. They're favored by 10. Over under is 237.5. Any thoughts on this series? Is there anything here you would play?
I mean, it's tough because every time you want to just say, hey, the Clippers are finally here, like they woke up like they just did the last game when they blew Dallas out. Then Dallas comes back and they win a game outright. And you're like, man, Luka Doncic, this guy is unbelievable. Well, that's what they've done twice. And, you know, I don't think they're going to do it again. I actually think 10's a little bit high when it's all said and done. If I were to line this myself without Porzingis, and then kind of you have to account for the fact that Luka did injure his ankle, and you know he has not been 100% in the last game, and he won't be for this one. I think it's probably closer to fair around 9. So at 10, you know, I'd only look the Dallas way. The total has just been creeping up every game the whole series. It started at 228.5. Now they're lining them at 238.5. There's just been a ton of points. Neither team can really stop the other. And you know, last game, the Clippers just shot, I think it was 61% from three, at least until the fourth quarter. They were over 60% from three until, you know, the scrubs were in. So if they, whoever shoots the hottest from three is probably going to win this game. I think Dallas can keep it within single digits, though. They've kind of earned the respect, I think, of bettors as well as just casual fans. And so it's a total pass for me. I did bet before game five that the Clippers would win 4-2. So kind of like they'll win the next two games, roll over parlay, so to speak. There was a few books that had that priced a little cheap. So I'm rooting for the Clippers to finish it off, but every time they've shown that they're supposedly they've woken up and they're going to play, like then the Mavs just punch them right back in the face. So it'll be an exciting game, but I'll be staying away from the spread and the total.
All right. Last but not least, Sunday, 8:30, you've got the Nuggets going up against the Jazz. Jazz favored by 2, over under, I want to say is 221, I believe.
Yeah.
So how are you playing this one?
So this is probably my favorite play of the weekend games. And I'll tell you what it is in just a second. But one thing that I don't know why it took Denver and Mike Malone this long within the series to figure it out. But in game five, they're down 3-1 in the series. In the second half, they finally started hedging Donovan Mitchell pick and roll with Rudy Gobert, and hedging meaning that the big guy and what had been Jokic, or in other cases, you know, Plumlee or Millsap, whoever it may be, Grant's been in the mix. rather than dropping off and letting Mitchell either roll off the screen and just shoot a three uncontested, or he would just drive and Jokic would kind of be backstepping and he would just get a layup or eat a little floater or he'd get fouled. And Jokic isn't a great defender. So the like after game one, even though Denver won, I went into overtime, you know, Mitchell dropped 57 points. It was like pretty obvious, like, all right, you need to adjust your defensive strategy here. They didn't do it in game two. They didn't do it in game three. They didn't do it in game four. They lost all three of those games, including a game Jamal Murray dropped 50. And then in game five in the first half, in the third quarter, they're down double digits. They finally change their strategy, Anita. So what happens? They come all the way back. They actually win. I don't know, end up winning by eight or so points. Like, it wasn't even like a super close game. They end up taking care of business. And now we're all sitting here thinking, holy cow, they might have found how to at least slow down Donovan Mitchell from scoring 50 or the other Jazz players from shooting 40 to 50% just because the threes have been so wide open because they've been playing this like back off, not contest strategy in the pick and roll. And then on top of it, the bench of like Jordan Clarkson and Yang and Tony Bradley, they've been out playing the Denver bench with before the series, we thought Denver had the better bench when it was all said and done. So I'm kind of one intrigued to see if Denver actually pulls this, you know, 3-1 deficit off to actually still win this series. I think they have a shot now because they finally figured out how to make the correct adjustments. But what it does speak to me is that both in that game five, both teams shot incredible from three, I think around 50% overall. And it still went over the total on like one banked three Mitchell had down nine with a few, like 17 seconds left. That had it missed, they wouldn't have even fouled. That would have been game over. He banks it in, they foul once, and then they try to score one more time. And that was it. It landed eight. Now we're getting the same total, except now we're getting a Denver team that, for one, figured out how to at least slow down the Jazz. You look at that second half, especially, you know, kind of into that third quarter, the scoring slowed way down. And the teams aren't just going to shoot 50% from three again combined. It just won't happen. Jamal Murray went off as well in his own right. I love the under. This is one of my biggest bets of the playoffs, under 221. I think the adjustments that Malone and the Denver Nuggets have made, combined with some regression in the three-point shooting, combined with now extra days to actually prepare for each other and make counter adjustments to the adjustments and just kind of going back and forth on, you know, Jamal Murray, how are the Jazz going to adjust to him? And they have Rudy Gobert behind, and how is he going to be affected defensively? I just think it speaks to an under. And, yeah, hopefully people want to go with it with me.
So Preston, this is your wager of the weekend is the Nuggets Jazz under 221.
Yep, absolutely.
Fantastic. Great stuff. Way to break it down as always. It's really a pleasure having you on the show when you do join us, Preston. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your weekend and enjoy the games this weekend as well.
For sure. You too. Thank you.
This is the Weekend Wager with Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.